You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three blues, three opinions, one Everton podcast.
Welcome to episode 197 of the Unholy Trinity Podcast, brought to you in association with Sports Social, Europe's largest sports podcast network, and also Fanatics. Recording on a Monday after a disappointing result at Goodison Park yesterday against Manchester United, it's got to be said. Obviously, a lot to unpack with what happened pre-match with the fan protests. A lot to unpack with what happened during the game, of course. And a lot to unpack in terms of looking ahead to this week as well, in terms of going to Nottingham Forest. But delighted to have on the show with me and Lee today. Been on the show quite a few times over the years. Is Jim Keoghan. And Jim, I'm going to bring you straight in because you've got a new book out for Christmas and we want to hear all about it.
Yeah, cheers. It's called Everything You Want to Know About Everton But We're Afraid to Ask, and it is pretty much, as the title suggests, it's everything about the club. It's greatest players, greatest games, greatest managers, worst players, top Everton that moment. It's not just the good stuff, it's the bad stuff too. It's kind of, you know, a handy guide to kind of why Everton are Everton and kind of what it means to be an Evertonian, and pretty much any fact. I mean, I probably missed a few, but pretty much every fact I could find on Everton from the start to the most recent seasons.
I'd love to know who's on the worst list, mate. I won't be any spoilers. I bet there's a few on there.
Yeah, it's worst 11 Premier League players and one sub. So it's everyone's got their personal favourite 11, or not favourite 11, but you know, I try to canvas opinion and get kind of a consensus, but. I think that was the more enjoyable stuff, weirdly. Find out our worst stuff and our kind of worst moments. There's kind of a perverse pleasure in kind of researching them and putting them on paper. But hopefully there's everything in there you could possibly need. Every, you know, light and dark, good and bad, you know, Howard Kendall, Mike Walker, all the everything covered, hopefully.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to having a read. I've got to be honest, because I know you went out to the masses on Twitter/X, as it's now known. For a little bit of input around certain things, and it follows in the footsteps of obviously the highs, lows, and Bakayokos, and a classic title. We all remember that one. Obviously, Everton number 9, which is a great read as well. I've read that one myself. So look forward to obviously having a look at this one as well, and seeing what it's all about. I'm sure we can all relate to all of the book, if not just some of the book, and I'm sure all of it will be able to relate to it, because we've all lived it, we all go through it on a weekly basis. But where can you get it from, Jim?
So at the moment it's just available on Amazon. So I mean, if you go onto my kind of Twitter link, it'll be there. On Facebook there's links there as well. So at the moment it's just there, but both in kind of paperback and Kindle as well.
And we put a link out post podcast as well on the actual podcast tweet itself, and throw it in Instagram stories and things like that. So if you want to get Jim's book in time for Christmas, great little stocking filler. If you want it for yourself, even better. Secret Santa, perfect present there. We'll put the link out And all proceeds go towards any kind of fine that Everton might get from the Premier League going forward for throwing cardboard at the officials yesterday. we'll put a link out. Definitely going to be worth a read, and it's you know just in time for Christmas, so absolutely perfect as well. So thanks for that, Jim. And you know we brought you on obviously to discuss the club, and a lot's been going on. You know, we recorded last week after we got the findings of the commission, so we know obviously with the 10-point deduction where we were yesterday. We saw, you know, an incredible fan reaction yesterday. It's got to be said. I've never seen anything like it. You know, and we've seen some great protests in recent months, and you know the last 12 months or so. We've seen great fan reaction to wanting to change the club. What I saw yesterday was something I've never ever seen before in terms of how everyone is so united and galvanized by this unjust punishment that we believe we've got of this minus 10 points from the commission. What was your take on what you saw yesterday, obviously before the game, Jim? Televised with it being obviously the half four game on the Sunday, you look back at that and I know I do feel an immense sense of pride.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, it was incredible because I mean, if you think back to a kind of past process that's have taken place at Everton, you know, going back to kind of, you know, protesting against like Peter Johnson and the move to Kirby and various protests against Ken Wright here and there, and you know, last season against Mascheri, nothing like that, really. I mean, it's hard to think about many other clubs who've put on a protest like that. Maybe because this is such a weird moment in kind of tough life football, it's rare for a club to be going through something like this. So maybe fans haven't had to galvanise to this degree, but it's an incredible sight. I mean, you see the pictures on kind of social media, you see it on telly, and you see everything's going on. To see that degree of unity amongst the fan base and those numbers, people really putting in the extra effort before and during the game to make some kind of make our point. It's, I mean, you know, everything about yesterday was what you would want apart from the result. And everything kind of surrounding the club and the fan base, it's exactly the kind of reaction that you need to kind of keep this story in the public eye, to keep it on the back pages and to make sure that they realise that Evertonians won't take this lying down, that there is enough fight in the club to kind of keep this going. Because as we were talking about earlier, it is just massively unjust. And I think the fans, really, for Evertonians, we are absolutely united in this to say that this can't go on.
And it was our first chance, wasn't it, in terms of getting to show the world what it means for us as fans of a football club that have lost 10 points, which we feel is totally unjust given what we've lost the points for, how severe the punishment was. And it was our first chance to really, really get that message across. We've seen social media, you know, in the previous sort of 7-8 days before the game. We knew what was coming. Probably didn't think it was going to be or go as well as it did. You know, I mean, the march before the game, it was thousands. They shook County Road off well over an hour before the game even kicked off. It was just incredible numbers. And then when you see all those pink cards getting held up before the game, when the players are coming out, that, you know, you look at the pitches and you look at the footage that was televised. It was just incredible. You know, the message being you know, totally one and a united fan base that we ain't going to stand for it. We're not going to, you know, as we said on last week's show, no one's sitting here saying Everton haven't done wrong. Everton have held hands up and said, listen, okay, we have breached. But what we're all saying is, if you think the 10 points is correct for this kind of breach, then you're living in cloud cuckoo land, because we've said it previously, you've let sides get away with absolute murder in the last 3 years, and then you want to use us as an example in a political game. And, you know, immense pride. I mean, I saw a little bit of footage of I watched it back this morning, just the pre-match stuff leading up to kickoff. And I saw the little smirks on Tarkovsky's and Mikhailenko's face as they were lining up, when all the Everton fans were just booing, absolutely baying for it. And, you know, the players know, you know, that we're totally, totally behind them as a team. But obviously, we've got to fight for our club. It's as simple as that. And, you know, we're almost being left to go to rack and ruin by the Premier League and the Commission. As far as I'm concerned, they could quite easily just destroy this football club. You know, as we've said already off air, you know, the reasons why, and everyone knows. Everyone knows. And this is, you know, it was obviously the game didn't go our way, which is a terrible shame yesterday. But to see those images before the game, to be in there, to be part of it, you know, it was incredible. And what are your thoughts, Lee? I'll just bring it at that particular point. You know, you see that footage and you see what happened yesterday. It was some message, wasn't it? It was some spectacle for everybody outside. I had to go to some park to have a little look of and understand what it's all about.
I think it sums us up as a football club. Do you know what I mean? I mean, Everton Football Club is more than just a football club for me. It, you know, it represents a real community. And I think it all came together and it all showed it there, both outside and inside the ground. You know, it's got to be one of... For me, obviously biased anyway, but it's got to be one of the best football clubs in the world. And I mean that sincerely. And what I mean by that is how it brings a community together. You'd almost say football mirrors society these days, and the fact that we live, you know, whether we like it or not, in an overt capitalist society. You know what I mean? Everything's instantaneous. Everything's about, you know, essentially money, greed, you know, and Everton are almost a sort of a throwback. That football's followed that. You know, you look at Chelsea, the way they've emerged. You look at what's happening to Newcastle now. You know, Man United, ever since the Premier League was incepted. You know, how many of those clubs have, like, local fans that are there? Like, we are home and away. You know what I mean? Everton are almost kind of like an antithesis to that, really, in the fact that, you know, yes, we've had investment and we've had our little bit of, you know, spraying money about a little bit and we've come, you know, a cropper on that. But ultimately what sits behind all that is just a football club that represents the community. And that was nothing more than emphasised than it was yesterday. And it made you proud to be a Blue, really. You know, and like Jim said before, you know, we pretty much had everything but the result. In a way, you'd almost say there was so much emotion, you know, outside and inside the ground. You know, it almost probably detracted from that. Hold on, we've got a football match to win here. Do you know what I mean? And that's hard to do. That's hard to do. And it's hard to do both as a, you know, as players on the pitch coming on. And like you said, Tarkowski smirking then and that thinking, this is incredible. But then we've got to go out here and now beat a team that, oh, look, ironically, that cost about £1 billion. Do you know what I mean? Or also, by the way, about £1 billion in debt. Now, don't get me wrong, they can service that debt, so you can, you know, they can, you can throw that out because of the revenue they have. But at the same time, when we're getting done for 19 million quid and getting dragged over the coals for it, and as I said to you off air there, when you look at our net spend over the last 5 years, Everton's net spend over the last 5 years is minus 28 million. And then you compare that to Chelsea's minus 783 million, Arsenal's minus 645 million. Villa's minus 365 million. You know what I mean? And the word sporting advantage was thrown around. Well, I know they've said, obviously, we've gained no sporting advantage. Only you have to look at those numbers to see that. That's over the last 5 years. You know what I mean? So, you know, Everton right now, where we have been in the last 2 years, certainly are a product of those numbers. We've not been able to invest in the squad. You know, we're having to sign the likes of Ashley Young, who's 38, and who shouldn't be anywhere near this level. He's up against 18, 19-year-old wingers who are leaving him for dead. Do you know what I mean? So, you know, the fact that Dyche, and to be fair, he's walked into an absolute, you know, carnage, absolute mess. He's finally got the club producing results on the pitch. Is it easy on the eye? Probably not. Is it the type of football we want to see week in, week out? Maybe not. Okay, we have showed bits in parts, by the way. But ultimately, he's got a team winning football games and a team that, you know, us as fans are proud of again. And finally now a season where we can go, you know what, we can play with it and we can go and watch a game without that added stress or looking over our shoulders. And then now all of a sudden we've been plummeted into another relegation fight. Whilst at the same time, giving the likes of Luton, Sheffield United and Burnley a massive kick up the backside to go, hang on a minute, we were doomed and gloomed here. Hold on, these guys have been thrown in, we can get out of this. And to put it in context, I think I said to you, Mike, that Wolves came 12th last season. If you'd have taken 10 points off them, they'd have gone down. Do you know what I mean? So whilst everyone's turning around and saying, oh, yeah, look, this is the best time to ever get this. These are the three worst teams ever. I don't buy that argument whatsoever. 10 points effectively, you know, is anywhere between a third and a quarter of the points that we probably you'd get to try and stay up. You know what I mean? So I think you know, we voiced it last week, but we saw the emotion, the anger, the unity all in one place yesterday. And I've just got to hope, and I think, Jim, you put a great tweet out, which I agreed with, the emotional effect this has on the players is probably more than we probably let on. You know, Sean Dyche can give all the sound bites he wants. The players can say, and there's a unity and all that. And I agree, there probably is. But if I'm sitting in that dressing room and we lose a couple of games, it wouldn't take much then to start feeling like we shouldn't be anywhere near this. This is not on. You know what I mean? And that's how precarious it is. You know, we've got a difficult fixture list between now and Christmas. And you know, we could quite conceivably be still in the bottom three. You know, so it's precarious to say the least. And I've made it vocal to you guys and obviously on Twitter as well, saying, you know, forget 5 points, forget 4 points. I want all 10 back. And I think the way it's being conducted, forget the mitigating circumstances, which in my opinion, some of them wrongly thrown out, the way it's being conducted is a farce. You know what I mean? In terms of, you know, not even having an actual specific procedure in place in terms of number of points, you know, for breaking some of the rules, making that up as they went along. The independent commission, in inverted commas, you know, we've later found out that involvements with other clubs, you know, there's plenty there that our lawyers can go after there and try and get the 10 points back. And I want those 10 points back. I want them back. And I'm sure the players and everyone else does as well, because it's a disgrace. I said to you before, Mike, you know, those players have worked their arses off for some of those results this season. You know, really left everything out on the pitch. And then to have that stripped away, yeah, it's nothing short of disgraceful for me.
No, I totally agree. And you know, what has been good in terms of what we've seen in the last week or so from external sources. We spoke last week, me, you and Frank, about trying to make sure that we control this narrative, because we know exactly what happens when it comes to the media. They feel sorry for you first, and then they start shifting their actual stance. You know, it went to last week, or Everton should just accept it and move on. You've committed the crime, deal with the punishment kind of thing. And you've heard a bit of that. But what we've seen in the two previous days leading up to the actual game against United, what I thought, by the way, was absolutely spectacular. You see the likes of Gary Neville calling them lawless, the Premier League, you know, lacking integrity. You saw, was it Martin Samuels in the Times? He just literally said, you know, it's literally bent. The Premier League is totally bent. And to have those kind of words used, by the way, in mainstream, and I'm not talking, you know, the Daily Star and nonsense like that. A massive, massively respected journalist and newspaper is a massive thing. And the Premier League are not going to be happy to have their brand portrayed in this particular way. You know, the Premier League, as we know, are all for the brand. The brand is the money. The money is the six or seven teams, as we discussed many, many times. So to have their brand portrayed like this, to have, you know, 38,000 Evertonians at Goodison Park holding up cards that says corrupt with their logo on, to have fans singing about it being corrupt, to have protests, to have multiple flags and banners in the ground, to have a plane fly over the flagship fixture of the weekend that Sky refused to show because he said it wasn't relevant, apparently, this morning. These kind of things, it went around the world. Do you think Richard Masters is sitting there now happy with this outcome? He thought we were just going to go away. He thought this is going to be a hardline approach. It shows we mean business. We're going to try and fend off this independent regulator. And all it's done is had the exact opposite effect of what he wanted. Now, what everyone is seeing is that the Premier League needs major upheaval and it needs to be regulated because they're an absolute law unto themselves. And we're not going to stop. This is week one. This is the first time we had a chance to actually vocalise and show what it means to us and how much we feel totally, totally betrayed by an organisation that really should be there to protect you. You know, they shouldn't be allowing clubs to be on the brink in the first place. They shouldn't be potentially putting clubs in a position which will see them go out of business. That's exactly what they're doing. Make no mistake about that. So, you know, that was our chance yesterday. It was done particularly well. It sent, as I say, it sent a very, very clear message. And I think the Premier League, in my opinion, now they've seen that, now they've got respected journalists, pundits who are literally saying, you know, it's a disgrace what's going on. They're a law unto themselves. All these kind of sound bites are not going to go down well at Premier League HQ, which, by the way, we were outside there on Friday as well. So we ain't going to stop. And this is the thing. And like you say, Lee, you know, with the best will in the world, we all want 10 points back. You know, you saw, was it Spurs that time when they lost, did they lose 12 points and were out of the FA Cup and they got a fine going back in the early 90s. And then all of a sudden they got reinstated, that the fine was made bigger and they got all the points back. So this is, we'd love to be in that situation where they say, listen, here's your 10 points back. Do we see it? No. But do we think we'll get something back? Yes, I do. Because this is taking this organisation. This is absolutely killing them. And that's why it's important that as Evertonians, we keep on going every chance we get. It doesn't even matter if they give us 5 points back or 6 points back. It matters in terms of from a mental perspective, of course. We'll all feel a little bit better. But they've taken 10 points off us that we've earned, that the players have earned, the manager have earned, and they totally deserve this season to be sitting in and around mid-table. We should be fighting all the way. So if they give us 6 points back, 5 points back, just keep on going. Keep on going. You know, let's drag the name through the mud. Let's get the regulator in and let's then try and move football forward. Because as we've seen in recent times, since they brought in this structure of profits and sustainability, or FFP, however you want to term it, it protects certain teams. You mentioned figures earlier about net spend over the last 5 years. There's a prime example. How come one club in the same league only spend £28 million and another one have a net spend of £700-800 million in the same league, and you're meant to compete and it's meant to be a fair and level playing field? That's what we're fighting for. That we want football back to being as fair as it can. Whether we can get there, probably not, but we'll keep going. And listen, we'll keep fighting for those points, because Everton deserves to have those points on the table. It's an absolute farce, but I think the
disappointment... It doesn't even stop there, though. When you look at the wages, I wonder if you've seen it on Twitter this week, you look at the wages in the Premier League, Everton's wage bill is around about £75 million a year. And that's like, Man United is nearly three times that, just under three times. And City's not far off that. Liverpool's is roughly double. You know what I mean? You're thinking like, yeah, how can you even compete with that? It's no coincidence when you look at the wages, the top six teams that pay the highest wages are also roughly the current top six right now. It doesn't take a genius to work out. I mean, I looked at Villa yesterday, who, you know, I think Emre, by the way, has done a fantastic job, and we'll all agree to that. Villa are playing some good stuff. They got a bit lucky yesterday. Tottenham should have been out of sight, but they managed to find a way to win. But then I looked at half-time, he changed it and brought Matty Cash off and Moussa Diaby, right? Moussa Diaby, they paid 60-odd million for in the summer, top player. And they brought on Leon Bailey, another top player, 25, 30 million. And they brought on Tielemans. You know what I mean? What, arguably a £50-60 million midfielder. You know what I mean? And I just said before, Villa are minus £330 million for the last 5 years net spend. So that just tells you, you know, we're competing with that. We're competing. As good a job as Emery's done, that's still a bloody good squad. To be honest, arguably a better squad than United put out yesterday.
I totally agree. And this is the thing. And don't get me wrong, but I don't want to go over old ground, but Everton have made massive mistakes in the transfer market. We all know that. But like, you know, we're quoting figures here from the last 5 years, and pundits want to go back over when Moussa first came in and we wasted loads of money. Well, that's irrelevant, really, to what we're actually getting charged for and what we've been found guilty of. And it's just, yeah, it's so tough to, there's so many facets to it, but it's good to have support of the likes of Neville and Andy Byrne, and fantastic letter that he's written to the Premier League, by the way. And obviously Martin Samuels and people like that. You do need, as much as we don't want pats on the back to say, oh, well done, you know, great show of strength and unity there. You do need allies in certain places, because the more people we get behind this from outside of the fan base and outside of the football club, the better, because that then brings about change and that then puts the pressure on and that then impacts the brand. And so that's what we need to try and do. And, you know, fantastic to see yesterday, but the game was almost, Jim, a centrepiece on the way to the game. I was concerned that it would become a little bit of a sideshow almost to what's going on around it. It almost did in a way, but that early goal, you know, if we would have scored ourselves in the first 10 minutes before that, you know, the next part of the process, it would have been electric. But they've gone and scored a goal, probably one of the best goals I've ever seen at Goodison Park, to be fair. It was absolutely incredible. But they've scored, haven't they? And they've absolutely zapped the life out of the stadium at that particular point.
Yeah, well, that was. I mean, I was talking to Blues that I know. That was the fear that we knew kind of before the game what the atmosphere would be like and what the crowd would be like. But the fear was if Man U scored early on, what would happen then? Because, you know, as we've referenced, those players have gone through quite kind of a... They've had like an emotional gut punch, haven't they, before that game. So, you know, we'll never know what that game could have been like without the 10 points, really, because... That kind of clouds everything. So those players, as soon as Man U scored that goal, part of their mind, they're thinking, "Oh, we're in the bottom two, and now we're 1-0 down." And suddenly the relegation fight becomes more real. So and the form we had prior to that game sort of doesn't matter. Everything sort of changed. So it was kind of the worst possible start you could have had for kind of that situation was United. Getting, you know, regardless of how they scored, I mean, it was an incredible finish. And probably you could hit that shot another 100 times and it would balloon over. Look, the one time he connects really well is in that moment. And I think that kind of, although Everton was well, he should have probably gone in a half-time level. And you've got that ongoing problem of the inability to kind of take our chances at home. I still think that has to be at the back of their minds now, not just in that game, in the games to come, that they've gone from being a team who were thinking they were, you know, potentially mid-table and a healthy distance between them and the bottom three. For the first time in 2 years, I think it's the first time since the Watford game, the 5-2, that we've been that far from the bottom three. So, you know, and Dyche has worked really hard on the mentality of the club to try and move them away from feeling like a relegation team. I feel like it finally turned a corner and done that. And suddenly this team are thrown right back into that kind of relegation conversation in an unfair way as well. And that's there. So, yeah, kind of as a fan, as soon as you saw that Man U goal go in, part of me thought, there's no way we're going to win this game now because... There's just too much, I mean, Dyche calls it the noise, doesn't he? There's just too much noise going on. And I feel like we've been thrown backwards to the previous 2 years. And I think that's going to be, you know, it worries me going forward in the games to come, the emotional state of the players. Because as we've referenced, they're only human, aren't they? And it's, you know, the more things go against us, the more games we lose and we can't get out of that kind of relegation melee. What happens then? So it's it was an incredible finish and an amazing goal, and it could not have come at a worse time for Everton, really.
Well, the footballing gods certainly weren't shining on us. Put it that way, you know. I mean, you couldn't have put it better. Do you? I mean, it's one of those where, I mean, it's goal of the season, isn't it? I'm not going to see any goal beat that this season. I'd be very surprised. It's goal of the season in the first 2 minutes. I mean, you couldn't have scripted it. I mean, when he hit it was almost like slow motion. I thought Pickford was going to get to it, to be fair, but then obviously it was one of those that just a bit like Rooney's, wasn't it? It's very similar to Rooney's against City. It's sort of like, you know, looped into the top corner, and like you just said there, you could put in 20, 30 crosses there, you'd probably score one at best, you know what I mean? And it's just it's so unfortunate that happened at that moment in the game. Yes, I think you're right in what you're saying in terms of it doesn't matter what type of goal, it could have been a tap-in. But also, I think just scoring that type of goal, people sitting down going, you're joking. How's that gone in? How's he just... And let's be fair, Garnacho showed nothing to me since he's been at United that he's capable of that. And even after he scored that, he didn't do anything in the game anyway. So, I mean, you're just thinking, just when we're down, that's the last thing you need. But you know what? I'll give massive credit to the players because they were clearly shell-shocked. You could see by the reactions when it went in. And like you said there, Jim, you know, it's that emotional state where you're kind of going, oh my God, you're kidding me. And we're now in a relegation scrap. You know, this is just, he's just scored the best goal I've ever seen. And then, and to be fair, they regrouped mentally. And that's testament to Dyche, and I agree with you there. He's worked really hard on trying to stop these players from being fragile when things go against them. And the irony is, a few of my mates who are United fans were messaging me saying, look, you score a goal, we'll crumble here because we're weak. We're weak mentally, and we've shown that several times this season. especially in Europe. United have crumbled in so many games in Europe this season against Minnows. And we just couldn't get that goal. We just could not get, the players did really well. United clearly, clear as day, refused to sort of like let us play on the counter-attack. They were almost letting Everton have the ball because they know, you know, ultimately this team, whether we like it or not, is set up for counter-attack. We're not great in possession, trying to break down defences. And, you know, you can see with Onana taking his time on the ball, then playing out from the back, which was embarrassing at times for them, by the way, because they clearly can't play out from the back. And we were catching them. And we had a 20, 25-minute spell where we should have really scored at least two or three, never mind an equaliser. You know, look at some of the chances that we had there. Decore's chance where he's let it slide across his body, he's got to do better there. Dom's had a couple of free headers. You know, unlucky with one keeper straight at the keeper. The other one, for me, that's food and drink for Dom from Ashley Young's cross. And then, you know, we had that other chance, Dom with the outside of his foot, and then the rebound's kicked off the line. You know, Idrissa Gueye, the worst person you want it to fall to, albeit he scored a brilliant goal last, you know, 2 weeks ago, panics in the box and skies it over the bar. You know, any sort of composure there, and, you know, he probably at least gets it on target. And then you just knew if we didn't score then, you know, when we were on top, it was going to come back and bite us. And, you know, you just knew then, as soon as that penalty's given or overturned in the second half, I mean, you know, again, another relatively contentious decision. I've seen a lot of Blues come out and say it's definitely a pen. You know, I'm sort of in the middle for me, and I'm not trying to be biased by any means. I just know, and the referee knows, by the way, that Anthony Martial is an expert at being able to drag his leg and throw himself to the ground. And don't get me wrong, Ashley Young has dangled his foot there, but he's timed that to perfection. I genuinely think I'd go as far as to say that as soon as Fernandez is making that and he's making his run, he's thinking, I'm taking a touch going down. Because if he takes that touch with his right foot, you can see that Tarkowski's on the cover. Tarkowski would have just swept up behind him. I genuinely think he's thinking, I'm taking a touch with my right foot and I'm dragging my left and I'm going to go down. And he's timed it to perfection. And the fact the ref's obviously given it for simulation initially. And you know what? With this whole clear and obvious stuff with VAR, if the referee had given it, and it went to VAR, I could kind of understand it. But the fact that he didn't give it, it has to be a real glaring error. And I still don't think it is. I still think there's an argument to say that he's, you know, almost initiated that or made sure he's made that contact. And again, it's just, you know, we can talk about VAR for the umpteenth time this season. It's a farce. But that killed the game, didn't it, as a contest after that. You know, the fans knew it. I think the players knew it, thinking, it's 2-0. We should be at least level on, if not better, in. And it's 50 minutes gone and we're 2-0 down. And then after that, to score three was a massive ask, wasn't it?
Yeah, but I think going back to, obviously, at our time, it should have been ahead for me. It should have been at least 2-1. We've missed some big, big chances there. And like you said, it's credit to the players. Because after the first 10 or 15, you've gone one behind. You've had the emotion of what they saw pre-match. And, you know, did it impact them in a way? I think they're probably more impacted by the fact that he'd lost 10 points, to be honest. But, you know, they responded. Sean Dyche has made them a resilient side. And it was like a flashback to, you know, that the Wolves game, the Fulham game, started the season where we created so many chances in the first half and we just couldn't put the ball back in the net. And like you say, it came back to haunt us, didn't it? Because you see what happens with the penalty. And the referee was pathetic all game. Like, he was trying to prove a point for me, the way that he refereed that game. You know, there was one late on in the first half, and there was more before, but the one that sticks out was when I think Harrison tries to switch the play, gets caught, the ball goes out of play, because he's played advantage, because the ball's in flight, he's played advantage, and you're thinking, okay, well, it's gone out, go back for the free kick. No, I played the advantage. Just little things like that, and then he's booking the Corey, because the Corey said, well, hang on. He's just fouled them late and he's booted the ball away. So if you're booking, like Ashley Young, we'll come on to him in a minute, by the way. If you're booking Ashley Young in the first half, then why aren't you booking him for that? There's two offences in one, and then he books the Corey. And it's things like that which totally got on my nerves. And the penalty for me wasn't a penalty. I think it's absolutely pathetic. I think you can see who initiates the contact. Ashley Young was still. He was stood still. You can see exactly what Martial's doing. Slow it down. As much as you want, it looks a million times worse when you slow anything down. And that's what absolutely drives you nuts, the fact that we can all do that. And, you know, sometimes when you look at tackles and players are looking at red cards and, you know, in slow motion, and it looks a million times worse. He's done it. He's gone down on purpose. It's quite clear. So I'm not even saying book him for diving, but it's not a penalty. It's just not a penalty. It's so, so soft. And I mean, you were saying that guy in Everton was screaming, oh, definitely a penalty, definitely a penalty. It's utter nonsense. Don't get me started on this, you know, because it just isn't, you know, we don't get that. I tell you now, we don't get it. We get to play a book for diving, and that's the end of it. So it was a great...
I think with referees, mate, sorry to interject, but I think with referees, your gut reaction is normally the right one, isn't it?
Hmm?
Yeah, you will get things wrong, of course you will. When you see it in front of you, without it being slowed down to the nth degree, when you see the passage of play in front of you and you see the way he falls to the ground, normally your gut reaction is the right one. You know, at the end of the day, if you're looking at it on slow-mo, then you are looking, is there contact? You know what I mean? Of course there's contact, because he's ensured there's contact. And look, Martial, you know, he's done it a million times. He's very good at it. He's made that look as almost natural as it can be. And, you know, like, don't get me wrong, it has divided opinion. Some Blues have come out, and I can almost see that argument as well. But knowing Martial as a player, I genuinely think he's got it in his head. I'm taking a touch and dragging my leg. You know what I mean? And I genuinely think he's done that 100%. And he's won the pen and killed the game.
Yeah, totally agree. And it was at that point, obviously, the crowd is still up. We're 1-0 down. You think we're in the game. He's getting booked for diving. Everton free kick. And it's two momentum killing goals that we suffered yesterday. One was unbelievable, but at a time when, you know, you could really do without it. And the second one, the penalty, was absolutely killed momentum again. And Everton obviously tried to react and probably had a little bit more success at 3-0, to be honest with you, with Martial obviously getting the customary goal that he ever scores against Everton, it seems, especially this, you know, later on in his career. But yeah, it was just a day that, unfortunately, it was almost too much, and the emotion was too much, and it just unfortunately didn't make its way onto the pitch in a positive way. Which I don't blame the player. I don't blame the players in any way, shape, or form. You know, I don't think that really. You know, we can't expect, as you said already, Jim, that, you know, we can't expect players not to be impacted by what they've gone through with these points deduction. It's just something which they never saw coming. The club hasn't seen coming. And they've been penalised, and we've been penalised through absolutely no fault of our own. And so it was a game that, you know, we'll look to move on from, of course, and hopefully the players don't let it sit in the mind for too long, because we've got to move on now, as if we've got minus 10 points. As much as we might get some points back, the players in the mind, you can't afford to sit there now and feel sorry for themselves, because we've got games to win. And we've got a fight on our hands. And, you know, if we get half our points back, it might take us out of the bottom three. But you're still short of sort of 4 or 5 points that you should have had. So you've got to now sort of look to move on. That was always going to be, I think, a difficult game, because it was the first time that we had a chance to show our dissent. So I think that was always going to play a part in the emotions of the players and impacting the players in some way, shape, or form. But, obviously disappointing game. But one of the things that I really want to touch on before we have a little look ahead to Forest is this right back position. Obviously, a couple of issues yesterday, and we discussed that after the show pre. Welcome back to the second part of today's Unholy Trinity podcast. Like I was saying before the break, still on the United game, but probably but bigger than that is the fact that, and we ain't doing this on the show in terms of calling players out, but I think it's a really important thing when it comes to, if players aren't playing well, and it's to the detriment of the team, and we've got two able right backs, by the way, sitting on the more than able, better than what's currently on show on the pitch, waiting to come in. You've got Seamus Coleman back from injury on the bench for the first time this season, which is fantastic to see. And Nathan Patterson, who came on with about 20 minutes to go yesterday. Ashley Young's had a really difficult start to life at Everton. You know, we see them get sent off in the Merseyside derby for two bookings. He's had six yellow cards now, is it? Which is a lot for this stage of the season. He's looked every bit his age. It's probably the really sad thing about it. And it's a player who really, you know, when you bring that kind of player in, he's the one on the bench. if you need some fresh legs on sort of 15, 20 minutes, you can get him on because he can play, you know, he can play further forward. He did it in the League Cup, didn't he, when he got his goal against Burnley. He got pushed on and Patterson come on at right back. So we know we can do that. But looking ahead to him now, obviously the game's gone. He got booked again, give away the penalty as well. Are you looking now with Seamus Coleman back and obviously Patterson getting a bit of game time yesterday, are you looking to change things up in that particular position?
Well, you'd hope so, because you feel like it's a bit like the Michael Keane situation at the start of the season, when Dyche obviously seems to see something in Young that we don't see, you know, and he's meant to be the football expert, but like he's becoming more damaging to the club than Richard Masters at the moment. He's costing us so many points. So, you know, as you said, he looks his age. He's been skinned regularly. You know, that's why he's getting so many cards, because he's just hacking people down because he can't cope with the pace of the game. He's making stupid mistakes. It feels very much like when you had Branthwaite waiting in the wings and yet Dyche would continually play Keane because he seemed to trust experience over youth, or I don't know, maybe he sees something in training that we don't see that these players can do. But you look at the kind of the recent performances by Young and it feels to me very similar to when Keane was playing at the start of the season, where there's a costly mistake. That it doesn't matter if he's all right for 80 minutes or even 85 minutes. There's going to be a period where he fucks up and he costs us dearly. And, you know, we definitely can't afford that now. Maybe if we're mid-table and you're thinking, well, he offers something somewhere else. Right now, every single point matters because, once again, we're in a relegation fight. So if you've got this player who, like Keane, has got a mistake in him and the game's passed him by at times. He just doesn't seem to read it properly. You wonder, you know, at what point does Dyche say, oh, this clearly isn't working? He obviously doesn't trust Patterson completely for whatever reason. I know he's young and he, you know, when he's played, he hasn't always been perfect, but he offers something going forward and he's got to learn the game. You know, he was quite wary of putting James Garner in the team as well because he's a young player. And yet now, you know, Garner's proved himself, hasn't he? And he's one of the first names that you want on that team sheet. So you've got Coleman coming back. But again, Coleman's been out for a long time and he's even older than he was. So is he going to be an improvement on Young or would he bring a similar set of problems? I don't know. So it's I think it's a frustrating name to hear on the team sheet before the game because you kind of, as fans, you're thinking, you sort of know what you're getting. There's going to be a booking early on. Then you're going to be worried. Is he going to get sent off? He's going to make you panic when there's a young, talented winger up against him. And, you know, I thought it was a soft pen, but, like, if you're dangling your leg out in the box, you're going to give players like Martial the chance to get a pen off you. You imagine a player of his maturity, you'd know that. But, you know, it suggests somebody who's maybe not up to the pace of the top flight anymore. So, yeah, ideally, you're right. When you're buying players like that, they should be a squad player there to maybe come off the bench for a bit, play in the League Cup, and maybe in emergency, they come in at right back. But I don't think it's worked. The move doesn't seem to have worked for anyone, for him. His form's dipped since he came from Villa. He's being costly for us. So, yeah, you want to see a change against Forest. What that change is, I don't know, to be honest. I mean, I personally give Patterson a go because he's young, he's full of energy. He can offer something going forward. And the defence is now generally more secure than it was at the start of the season. You've got a good centre-half pairing. Midfield's working well together. So maybe he can get covered better. But I definitely don't want to see Young as a starting right-back. Again,
I think that's a good summary, mate. I think one of the hardest positions you can play in the Premier League is fullback because you've got to get up and down that pitch, support the attack, obviously get back and defend. We've obviously brought Young in for his, you know, he's obviously a good pro, looks after himself by all accounts. Dyche said he's one of the leaders in the dressing room. I can imagine him being quite vocal. But if you're 38 years old playing at fullback against, in his case yesterday, fast teenage wingers. His booking for me sums him up this season. That booking, Garnacho's taken a bad touch and he's flown in and he's miles away from it. miles away. You know, Gary Neville famously came out, didn't he, and said he played three games and then said he wanted to retire straight away to Fergie. I think Fulham was one. Goodison was another against Baines and Pienaar, and there was another one, I can't remember which one. And he said he should have been sent off, arguably, in all those three games for missed time and tackles. And he said he should have gave away, I think he gave away a pen. He should have given away two or three other pens, he said, as well. And then straight away he realised, I can't cope with these fast wingers anymore, I'm out. And he checked out. And this is what we're seeing now with Ashley Young. You know, the lad, like you said, he's sent off in the derby. The amount of times he's picked up these yellows for missed time tackles is unbelievable. And I do agree with you, Jim. I think Dyche has to be really convinced to be able to replace youth with experience. Experience with youth. And you know, he's done it with Branthwaite, who's finally also showed him he can play at this level. Same with Garner. He's got to do the same at right back now. He's got to. And the other thing as well, by the way, I felt for Harrison, who's been arguably one of our best players since he's come in the team, both, and his numbers show that as well. He was doubled up on several times yesterday. You know, Shaw there, and obviously Garnacho coming back and covering. And we all know, obviously, he likes to cut in on his left foot. But, you know, you watch other teams. You know, if you look at someone like Saka for Arsenal on the right-hand side, Ben White is gone every single time Saka gets that ball. So instantly, that's drawing one of the double-up guys to the fullback who's making that run. Now, sometimes Saka will feed him. Other times, he'll come inside on his left foot. And he'll either recycle it to Odegaard or he'll have a shot or put a cross in. And at times yesterday, I felt for Harrison because he was coming inside, but there was traffic because there was people doubling up on him. There was no fullback going beyond him to give him an alternative option or take away the fullback who's marking him. And he saw it when Patterson came on, when he was getting beyond him, all of a sudden that freed up a bit of space for Harrison to be able to do what he can do. So we need that. And by the way, particularly at home as well, particularly at home, we need fullbacks like Patterson who are willing to get beyond their winger and put crosses in the box or get to the byline or win corners, free kicks, whatever. And that's why it's costing us. You know, as good a job as Dyche has done since he's come in, our home forms needs fixing. You know, we've got 4 points this season at home from seven home games. You know what I mean? Is it seven home? I think it's seven home games, isn't it? It's there or thereabouts. So 4 points from a possible 21, say. That's not good enough. You know, our away form has been the reason why we are where we are, where we were. But he needs to find a way to improve that home form if we're going to stay in the Premier League. He needs to find a way. And part of that, for me, has to be having fullbacks that are willing to attack and get beyond their wingers.
No, the fullback point is a really, really brilliant point. And I'll tell you for why it is, because I had the fella sitting next to me. This is a lovely fella. I think he was a little bit leathered yesterday before the game. He had a long day drinking before he even came in, to be honest with you. But he kept on roaring about Harrison, and Harrison's not doing this, and he's terrible and all that. That's a real valid point. So often he had two players every single time just marking him, and because there was no one overlapping him, taking that other player away. And it's so important because you can't expect players to beat two men every single time and look to try and make something happen. It's not going to happen. We've seen it a bit more now with, obviously, Mikhailenko he nearly got a goal, didn't he, again yesterday? So unlucky. Another great strike. Lovely bit of football between him and Dan Juma, to be honest. But you see Mikhailenko now just getting forward a little bit more. You know, he scored a couple of goals in his last three games. As I say, nearly scored again against United. You don't see Ashley Young doing that. And how many times has Mikhailenko been called out for not being an attacking fullback and doing that side of the game? It's something that he really works on and I think is improving in. And we're not seeing it with Ashley Young. And I know, obviously, Coleman's 35 now. And again, really, really good point, Jim. How does he come back from this injury at 35? What level is he going to hit? Now, we've seen him come back from, you know, a major injury in the past, but he was much younger when he went through that leg break for Ireland. He's had a few niggles, obviously, in recent years. Seamus Coleman is a fantastic professional. You know, we know exactly what you get with him, but we know in the last sort of two or three years he's slowed down. He's not a buccaneer and right back that he used to be. But even I think back to Leeds last season when he got forward and got that goal, and you know, you don't see that from Ashley Young. And that's why I think that Patterson, I think it told its own story yesterday when Patterson came on and not Seamus Coleman, because Coleman's played a lot of football for the 21s in the last sort of 3 or 4 weeks. So he got a lot of game time, which built up to the game in midweek against Bilbao when he played the full 90. So he's played a lot of, probably played more football than Patterson, to be fair. So I was almost thinking, well, I can see him bringing on Seamus Coleman more than Patterson, but he didn't. And I think that tells its own story. Going forward, if he makes that change, which he's got to, let's get it right, he's got to make the change. Now, you say it's like the Michael Keane hill all over again that he's willing to die on. Patterson's going to get the nod, and rightly so. And so he should. You know, we've been saying it for weeks. He played well against West Ham when Ashley Young was suspended. And then barred the first 15, 20 minutes. And then we didn't see him. The week after, Young came straight back in, which I can never work out. So I think looking ahead to Forest, I think that's one change that I would like to see, is that also Amadou Onana was a huge miss, wasn't he, in the midfield yesterday. You know, he's become such a pivotal player, I think, to this side. He's become a lot more consistent. And he's a player that for me is one of the first names on the team. She's not having that physicality against United. You know, they allowed that the young kid who came in for them, who had a good game, he ran the midfield, and I think if Onana's in there, that just doesn't happen. You know, he's too big, he's too strong, he can carry the ball at pace. And I think that showed up. But for Forest, Jim, obviously, what they did last season, when obviously they weren't playing particularly well, they were struggling, and all of a sudden they changed a few things. Obviously, they put about 900 players, didn't they, that they brought in the transfer window when they first came up, you know, what the turnover of players was like then. But they changed something, and the setup was different. And then, I think, post-Christmas, the home record was one of the best in the Premier League. And we've kind of seen it again this season. I know we got beat by Brighton at the weekend, which is, you know, no shame in that. Brighton had quite a few injuries, and I don't got sent off. But they're a difficult side, aren't they, at home to go and get anything off. So it's going to be a bit of a task next weekend. But hopefully we've got Onana back for that game as well.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be an interesting game because, you know, it's kind of the first away game since all this happened. So you haven't got that kind of the pressure maybe of what yesterday was, and as Dave says, the noise around it. So we're on the road, so you can say that's kind of, you know, the crowd pressure maybe isn't there. We're also we're not a bad away team. We're set up for, you know, to play on the counter. And that seems to work better away than it does at Goodison. So you're right; it's not an easy game. Forest, you know, they're a decent team, especially at home. But I mean, I think they're beatable. I'm not, you know, that's the weird thing. If the 10 points hadn't happened, and you'd be going into this game, even if we just lost at United, you'd be feeling quite confident about the weekend. You'd think, the way we play and where we were in the league and how things were kind of mentally around the team, you'd see Forest away as a potential 3 points, especially after kind of what happened against Palace. You think of it as kind of a similar challenge, similar kind of level team, but haven't, you know, kind of capable of taking a game to them and getting 3 points. So it's just that the 10 points change things now, don't they? Because we're not where we were, you know, 10 days ago. So it changes. All it takes for us to get an early goal, and once again, do the players start thinking, oh Jesus, you know, we ever gonna get out of this bottom three, and are we gonna be, you know, rock bottom by Christmas? So it's kind of in football terms, 10 days ago, I would have backed Everton, even though I'm generally pessimistic when it comes to Blues. I would have thought, actually, yeah, you know, despite Forest's form and expect what they're like at home, we're probably the team who you'd back. But it's it makes it a really kind of challenging fixture. It's one I think we kind of have to win, don't we, really? When you think of the games that are coming up over Christmas, it's a really tough run for Everton. So we need points quickly. We need to kind of mentally and literally get out the bottom three as soon as possible. So it's become a must-win game. But I think, you know, if you don't take into account what's happening player for player, I think we're still the better team. I think we should, you know, expect to go to places like Forest and win. But, you know, at the moment, you don't know what effect this is going to have on the team. So it's a game we need to win. It's a game that, in all these circumstances, I think we could win. But it's going to be really tough for us, I think.
And they've only lost one home game this season, Forest. But I'll caveat that with I think they've only won two home games. So a great win against Villa a few weeks ago, of course. And then they won the first game against Sheffield United as well. But they've had quite a few draws in there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Luton went there and got a draw, didn't they? They drew with Brentford as well. So it's not, you know, yeah, okay, it's a difficult place to go. We went there last season, should have really won the game. That was the one away game I actually got to, and I couldn't believe it, 2-1 up. This is going back to Sean Dyche's famous lack of substitutions, that Decore stayed on the pitch. There was about three or four players absolutely knackered in that game, and Decore made a mistake, give the ball away for their equaliser. But it was a game whenever Everton had some really good chances again, and it's, you know, it's like hostile. It was lively at times, but I don't think it's the worst place to go in terms of the fans are good, but it's not, you know, we're not going there getting bloody pig's heads thrown at you in the corner, are you, and things like that. So it's not the worst place in the world, but I think it is a difficult place to go. It's become a more difficult place to go, and maybe more difficult than we thought it maybe when they first came up. But he's done a decent job there, obviously, Cooper. But what are your thoughts, Lee? You know, Jim's saying there it's certainly a winnable game. Maybe it's a must-win game, given what's to come after that. Obviously, Newcastle, I can't stand them either, but they're coming to Goodison Park on the 8th of December. We've got, obviously, City in and around Christmas. We've got the League Cup coming up, Chelsea. There's a lot going on in December. What are your thoughts on the game?
Yeah, it's one of those, isn't it, where, like Jim was saying before, if we were in the situation which you've been dropped into, you wouldn't be as worried. I was looking at their fixtures and their form there. You're right, Mike. They've only won one out of the last nine games. And there have been a few draws in there. Obviously, Brighton, who we know can beat anyone on their day, have gone there and won at the weekend. And they had Lewis Dunk sent off after 70 minutes as well. Burnley went there in the cup, away from home. I was looking at the team. They put a fairly strong team out. And Burnley went there and won 1-0 at Forest as well. And, you know, if you look at the Burnley team we played, you know, they were easy on the eye, but they carried zero threat whatsoever, didn't they? You know what I mean? So, I genuinely think it is an opportunity for us to pick up some points. Look, don't get me wrong, it's going to be under the lights. It's on Sky again. It's a Saturday night game. They're going to be up for it. They'll fancy winning it as well. But, you know, it's a chance to reverse the momentum a little bit here after coming, you know, let's be honest, the international break came at a bad time for us in a way. I think if we'd have played United before the international break, you know, I'm not saying that we would have won the game, but you might have seen a slightly different result. You know what I mean? Because obviously it's like resets the season again, doesn't it? So I think it's an opportunity for us to get a result. Look, they stayed up principally on their home form last season. And on the whole, it was very good. You know, it was a tough place to go. You know, they always put a shift in. You'll get a lot of honesty from them. We know that. And like you said, Cooper's done a good job, and he has. And I think he's a likeable manager. I think a lot of people won't have a word to say about him. I think he's done a very good job at Forest. So let's see. Let's see how it plays out. I think we've got to be solid. We've got to be solid. They're going to come out in the traps. The fans will be up for a night game, like I said. We've just got to calm the situation down and play away into the game. And I think it'll be quite similar to sort of the West Ham game. I think it'll be quite tight. And it'll come down to maybe a bit of quality. But I do agree, Ashley Young can not be starting at right back whatsoever. I mean, I don't imagine him against Anthony Elanga, who is one of the quickest players in the league. You know, there's no chance whatsoever I want him up against Anthony Elanga. And to be honest, it's a big ask to throw Coleman in there as well, having been out for so long. You know, as much as we love him and things like that, to throw him in there against a really quick winger. I think Patterson has to be given the opportunity to show he can claim that spot now. And look, it'll be an interesting game. It will be an interesting game. Morgan Gibbs-White got on the goal. Got on his first goal of the season. He's probably their best player. Do you know what I mean? I know they paid a lot of money for him. He was very, very influential for them last season. He's clearly a good player. He scored at the weekend. But they've obviously lost their big guy up front, haven't they? The Nigerian striker who scored some really important goals at the end of last season. And obviously Chris Wood's come into the fold now. So I would fancy Tarkowski and Branthwaite to handle Chris Wood, in all fairness. You know, particularly Tarkowski will enjoy that physical battle. So it's just a case of then how do we control their wingers, really, and then how do we grow into the game. But I do think we'll cause them problems, and Everton have to go there like we have done recently at Palace and West Ham, and I think we can get a result, lads. I really do.
Yeah, as you mentioned there, obviously, I wanted the centre forward. He's been brilliant for them. He's a real powerhouse, isn't he? And great news. Obviously, terrible thing to say that he shouldn't be fit for the game. But playing against Chris Wood, he always does something against Everton. He's about 7'3". He's a big, strong lad, isn't he? So they're going to have to be on the game, Grant Waite and Tarkowski. They have to try and bully him a little bit if they can, because what comes behind him and what, you know, the wide players are. The talented, aren't they? Obviously, you've got likes of Gibbs White, you've got likes of Alanga, even likes of Hudson-Odoi and players like that. You know, they are a threat and they've got pace. And that's where, when you look at the right-back situation for Everton, you've got to look at getting Patterson in there. You know, it's got to be the change. It just can't be Ashley Young, basically, is what we're saying. And maybe it is time for him to now step out and then be used in the way that he should be used, which is as a squad player and maybe playing further forward. You know, we've got a cup quarter final coming up. I'm not averse to making a few changes there against Fulham. So, you know, he will get chances elsewhere, but he should be at his age, a player who comes off the bench. It's that easy. And he's made far too many mistakes since the start of the season, really, which have led to bookings and you know, problems for ourselves and goals. So let's hope that the manager sees it the same way. Let's hope we get Amadou Onana back in as well. I think he's massively, massively important to that side, and we can get something from the game. But let's finish with our round of predictions, if we can, Jim. What's your thoughts, final score?
Well, I'm going to be kind of insanely optimistic. By my own standards, I'm going to say we're going to win 2-1.
We'll all take a 2-1 win, that's for sure, Lee.
I was going to say the same thing. I think they'll score. I do think, like we showed at Palace, we are capable of carrying a threat on the counter as well. So I'm going to say 2-1 as well. I just want to say as well, by the way, and I think this is a good point worth making, is, you know, whilst Everton should be on 14, as we've said before, and Dyche, it'll be interesting what Dyche is doing there. He mentioned a couple of times in his post-match, didn't he, about 14 points, we're on 14 points. And if I remember Rooney, when he was at Derby facing a similar thing, he put two tables up in the dressing room, didn't he? Like the actual table and then the one where they should be. So I can imagine him maybe referring to that, maybe psychologically himself. But also on the flip side of that, I think with, you know, we've been very fortunate, haven't we, lads, with injuries this season, really. You know, losing Onana there, obviously, is the first major one we've lost. And with the fixture list coming up between now and the end of the year, you know, we're arguably going to be playing the same number of games as we have done since the start of the season in a very congested period. And I think we've got to be very careful with certain positions on the pitch. Namely, I'm thinking Calvert-Lewin, possibly even some at centre-half. If we get an injury at centre-half or Calvert-Lewin at the minute, that's going to have a huge impact on us, isn't it? And we have been fairly fortunate. And if I was Dyche here, I'd be cautious with Calvert-Lewin. We've got three games in a week coming up, haven't we, next week as well. And I'd be very, very cautious how we manage Calvert-Lewin there, personally. Whether it's worth throwing in, you know, Beto, who's injured, obviously, at the weekend. But I think he's got to be careful how he manages that, hasn't he?
Yeah, we've been here before. Overload for Calvert-Lewin's never a good thing, is it? And we don't want to, you know, go into a busy Christmas period as well. As you say, we've got a busy, busy sort of week coming up anyway. That you've, you know, look at Chimiti. I thought he come on and handled himself really well. I know it was 3-0 at the time, but I thought he looked particularly strong. He looks a little bit bigger, I think. Put a little bit of muscle on. Unlucky not to score. Some good hold-up play. Lovely bit of work at the corner with a little back heel back to Harrison, I think it was, as well. He looked lively, and I think, I'm not saying, by the way, listen, he's the second coming of Jesus, but, you know, he looks to be developing nicely. You know, scored a couple of goals in international break. He scored his first goal for the club in the Papa John's Trophy. So he's getting a little bit of confidence, probably settling down a little bit, getting used to the customs over here. It's always a big change for players, especially when they're so young coming away and coming to a different country. So I was impressed with him yesterday. So maybe he's going to get used a little bit more in the next few weeks. Beto, obviously, hopefully, his injury is not too bad as well, and we'll see more of him. But I'm going to go for a repeat of the Brentford game. We'll go Everton 3-1. As you say, away from Goodison Park, we look like a different team, to be fair. We do look like the pressure's off a little bit. I'm hoping, you know, we get a date set for this appeal. Let's get it in the diary so we know what we're working towards, because we all need this not so much closure. We need to know what the situation is sooner rather than later, and I think that will help the players and the manager know exactly what's going on. But I do think we'll go there still full of confidence. Why not? You know, you can lose to United on any given day of the week, you know, no matter what's going on. They're not a bad side. I think for me, they were there for the taking. I've got to be honest with you. They're not the best United side I've ever seen, but we shouldn't be too downhearted getting beat to a world-class goal and a dodgy penalty, in my opinion, which really changed things. So go there full of confidence. I'm going to go Everton 3-1. But that's us for today. Jim, really appreciate you coming on the show and spending a bit of time speaking to us, obviously, about the Blues and of course, your book as well. We've lost Jim right at the last moment there, but I'll pass on our regards. And we will catch you ourselves next weekend when we look back on the Forest game, of course, and ahead to our favourite opponent at Goodison Park, of course, Newcastle United. So we'll catch you then.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three Blues. Three Opinions. One Everton Podcast.
Sports Social Podcast Network.